MDRadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. I am Dr. Mike, and this is Code Delicious. I've got to tell you, I am so absolutely terribly excited and delighted to have our next guest on the radio today. We are so very fortunate. She travels around the world. She's known internationally, in my humble opinion, one of the great culinary talents and certainly one of the premier spokespersons for the Mediterranean cuisine, Jumana Akkad. She was born in Beirut. She travels back and forth between Beirut and the United States, where she's been living for many decades. And you guys don't need to hear any more from me. Let's get her on with her knowledge as well. Jumana, thank you so very much. I'm so happy we were able to get you between, you know, your flights. And thanks again for taking the time to chat with us and our audience today.
Dr. Mike, I'm the one who's so thrilled. I mean, I've been following you for years as well, and I was so excited when you invited me on your show. I mean, it's such a unique combo. I mean, when you usually you go to a heart doctor and you expect him to be talking only about your heart, and so it's so fun to have someone who's actually able to be on both sides of the of the issue here, so, and who could
really what we're really learning is that particularly the cuisine that you're an expert at, which is the Mediterranean cuisine, and we'll get into the finer points of the Lebanese flavors and aspects on that in just a minute, but you know, really what we're learning is that you're administering maybe some of the most potent, best preventive medicine on the planet. And you were continually, and I just spoke a little bit earlier about the gut microbiome and that we have to keep these bacteria in our gut healthy and happy.
Yes.
And these bacteria have evolved with us over millennia to co-metabolize our food. And when we feed them a lot of the things found in the modern Western diet, we introduce disease and disability. But when we feed them the fresh, wholesome, authentic ingredients of a cuisine, you know, that you go out and teach, and it might say, folks, you've got to go to our website, Taste of Beirut. But I'm warning you, if you go, please do not go hungry, because she makes the food look so good. I have to clean the drool off my keyboard, you know, every time, because I just want to reach in, you know, through the screen, put my fist through the screen and grab, you know, some of those mouth-watering of photos that you create. So don't go hungry, but definitely go to tasteofbeirut.com and you'll see what we're talking about. So really, you know, what you're creating is a sense of, in a sense, a food history. So can you tell us a little bit about how you kind of got into food and where your particular take on this cuisine comes from?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, as a Lebanese, you grew up thinking about food. It's something natural. It's only when I moved into the States and I was young that, you know, I saw people buying salad dressing, and I was so surprised. I mean, why would you buy a salad dressing when all you got to do is just squeeze a lemon and add some olive oil, you know? But I had always been interested in food, very interested in food. And my grandmother lived with us. And at the time, she was the one in charge of cooking. And she was the one who perpetuated the tradition, because she had never traveled in her life. Lebanon was all she knew. Yeah. Oh, that's all she knew, and so she was, okay, for Easter, we make mamoul, and for this, we do this, her marketing was lowering the basket and getting the fruits and veggies from the cart down the street, and haggling from four stores.
So did she actually haggle out the window to the vendor down below?
I couldn't believe it. I was so embarrassed. What do you mean 15 piastres, which is 15 cents a kilo? I'm not buying it, you know, that kind of stuff. So I moved to the States, and I'm in a completely different environment. And, you know, food is our identity. So you feel like, okay, I've got to recreate this. This is who I am. And I slowly got it.
That is such a... That is such a, I think, a profound statement, you know, that you just shared with us, that food is your identity. And so when you came to the States, you know, I can tell you, you know, in my interactions with people all across this country, you know, you don't really hear that from Native Americans, other than the Native Americans, you know, say, wow, you know, this food, this culture is my identity. I think, you know, if you could share with us just a little bit more, because it really sounds like it's not just the food for you. It was that whole food experience with community and family that made such an impression on you.
Yes, because, well, actually, this slogan, this tagline I got from Kamal Mzawa, who's also, he's very well known, and he's the one who came up with the idea to have farmers from all four corners of Lebanon sell their produce and their cooked food, because even though Lebanon is a very tiny place, it's got only 4 million people, every region is diverse in climate, in geography, therefore every cuisine is different. And this is why Mediterranean cuisine is so healthy and special, is because people cooked with what they had. There was no, you know, year-round strawberries, for example. In the mountains.
And you're really hit. Oh, that's okay. You got me so excited, you know, that I just want to jump in, because I think you really, really, again, hit on something. In the States, there's sort of, you know, everything comes through the big advertising and the television, and we get the 30-second sound bites, no pun intended, that are not really very good, very nutritious food for thought. Let's leave it at that. But, you know, the Mediterranean is a big place. There's 22 countries as of now, and it was very different in prehistory, that bordered the Mediterranean. But yet we tend to focus mainly sort of on Italian cuisine, Greek cuisine, and Lebanese food, you know, is its own, if you will, speciality. But even within Lebanon, you're telling us that it can be pretty different just depending on what region you live.
Yes, exactly. Because when I talk about Lebanese, and this is the reason why when I published the cookbook through HCI, I wanted to go back to Lebanon, and I've spent the last 5 years living there, not just in Beirut, which to me, Beirut is like any other big city. It's very, you know, cosmopolitan and stuff. But I went up into the mountain. Luckily, we have a house and a little orchard where I interacted with the farmers, and I became very well-versed in how they live and how they eat and how they cook and all this. In order to talk about Lebanese cuisine, you have to go back to the rural times. You have to go 100 years. You can't talk about it today, because today Lebanese cuisine means what? It means nothing. It's become homogenized like the rest of the world. People there love a good burger, you know? So that's not Lebanese cuisine. Yeah. Lebanese cuisine is a village. It's what they eat in the villages. Yeah.
And I can tell you, though, it's the same thing. My first trip to Japan, you know, and I'm not going to give away my age. Let's just say it was many decades ago.
Yeah.
And I was actually there when the very first McDonald's opened. And as you said, you know, there you could go in different areas or these different cuisines. But now there's just homogenized, you know, Western fast food with McDonald's, a Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, on every corner. And I've got to take my hat off to you. If you could see it, you know, I'd have it off right here and now and tipping it to you, because you really are getting back to the roots, and you're just doing a yeoman's work there, because you're preserving, you know, a food culture, a food heritage.
Yes, exactly.
And if you could share with me, maybe, and our listeners, say something that, you know, is a consistent item but would vary by the different regions you would go to.
Example,
like in the United States, it's like barbecue, right? You know, there's North Carolina barbecue, there's St. Louis, there's Texas. It's all barbecue, but they do it differently.
Yes. For example, you have the kibbeh. The kibbeh is considered one of the national dishes. Well, the people in the South fix it differently than the people in the North. In the North, they would slaughter a goat, and I was there. I didn't watch it, but afterwards, they eat it. They clean up the goat, and it's the kibbeh, which is the tartar. And down in the South, they use other spices. Now, they have a spice mix whereby they go into the wild and into the garden, and they pick anything that is fragrant. So they would put in their spice mix rose petals, not just any rose, but it's called a Damascus rose. Yes, and they use a lot of marjoram, za'atar, and any kind of herb that's fragrant, basil. So the northern people don't do that. The northern people is just salt and pepper, the goat, and the bulgur wheat, which is the cracked wheat, cracked and parboiled. And, for example, every community I've talked to and became friendly with would teach me about, you know, their tradition. And, it's like never-ending. And you find that people, even in Beirut, don't know about what people in the villages eat, like the grape molasses. I would ask them, have you ever had grape molasses? No, what is that? What do you mean, what is that? 30 miles away, that's where what people do every harvest. They pick some of the grapes to make the molasses.
So why do you think that is? I mean, it really seems like, and again, to hark back to what you said earlier, you know, food is your identity, but it seems like that identity is now being lost, you know, in the bigger cities, if you will. And is that the urbanization? Is it an influx of sort of the modern Western diet?
Yeah, that's the also there's a fascination with American culture. Anything that comes from America, but it's not just that. It's also a price also. I mean, I think World War II, olive oil was more expensive than corn oil that was imported. So gradually people started using imported oil.
When you go back next time, and here's, I'm going to give you a gift to take back, which is just tell them to look at Japan and to draw that contrast, you know, that I was just talking about when I was there the first time. You know, they were eating what I would consider sort of the traditional Japanese cuisine, traditional Japanese diet. The people were healthy. They were active into their elder years. The kids were healthy, beautiful skin on the children, the ladies, the men, etc. Now, when I go back over and we've seen the westernization and the modern Western diet, and it sounds, you know, almost like a deja vu of what's just starting to happen in Lebanon now. Mm-hmm. You know, they all look like Americans. They're overweight. Their skin is awful. Everybody's wearing glasses.
Yeah.
And it was literally sort of the if you will, the dark and, you know, the dark side, you know, it's almost like we were sending them Darth Burger, you know, with the dark side of all our Western influence. And is there, at least in the United States, I feel that probably because of some chefs and people like yourself out there who have taken this wholesome, authentic food and brought into the kitchen and shown us how delicious it can be, and as this incredible side effect, almost, I say, by divine intervention or accident, it turns out that that's the healthiest cuisine for us. Is there any movement? Do you have any help in Lebanon to salvage that?
As I was mentioning, this man and Kamal and others, there has been a movement that tries to emphasize the heritage, and you know, it is taking hold because people are realizing, man, if we lose this, we lost it. We've lost everything. We have nothing. I mean, it's not like we can gain it back. I mean, when you're up in the mountain, for example, I would see people hunched over some herbs, and I would ask them, you know, what are you foraging exactly? What is this? Oh, this is wild dandelion, and it's called, you know, such and such. So they come back to the mountain to forage and to make a salad with wild dandelion. So that's a good sign. They don't want to...
That is a good sign berries. That there is help. Yeah, there's help. And if you could share, you know, with our listeners, because I think... In my opinion, I absolutely love, and a lot of it's your, I mean, as I said, pick up a taste of a Beirut cookbook. It's filled, you know, and it's more than a cookbook because, you know, and I think, and I don't want to belittle it by saying it's just a cookbook because it really reflects what you're bringing to the show today, which is, you know, the stories and the history. And, you know, when you're cooking there, it's not just some dead recipe, but you really bring the cuisine alive. And I think not only is it tasty, not only is it healthful, absolutely delicious, but it's Lebanese cuisine is really unique because of the location of the country. It has some influences. You know, it's not the same as going to, you know, to Greece. And if you could just share a little bit about some of the things, in your opinion, as an expert in this cuisine, kind of what makes it unique, what separates it apart from other areas where you can find different flavors of Mediterranean food.
Well, what struck me is the Lebanese, people who have a knack for taking something that's very just a few ingredients and turning it into something just delicious. It's as opposed to, for example, if you think of the French and how sophisticated the French cuisine is, and how, you know, the Lebanese is just some olive oil, some garlic, you know, but as long as it's fresh and it's always based on that. I got some fresh mint from the garden. Well, fresh mint in Lebanon is present at the table every single day. And it's got a little plate of olives. And if you grab a piece of bread, you always put a little piece of fresh mint in there, some olive and some yogurt cheese, and which is basically drained yogurt. And that's it. You can make it a dinner. I mean, it's simple.
It's interesting, you know, you bring that up because I was just reading the other day. I think the powerful things about Lebanese cuisine and a lot of the Mediterranean cuisines is what you highlighted. It's readily available to a busy American because it's not the 22 ingredients in beef bourguignon,
right.
You know,
right.
That's 6 hours long. It's whatever you can get fresh. It's highlighting those fresh flavors. And it's so good. And when you said mint, it recalled, you know, we often talk about and you hear, you know, on Dr. So-and-so's, you know, television show, take cinnamon. It's very powerful. It's the ultimate spice. And it really is. But the one entity in terms of herbs and spices that packs a bigger punch, you know, per serving, per weight than cinnamon is actually mint. Incredibly. Yeah,
oh,
just packed
with
antioxidants, phytotech. So when you're telling me that, you know, fresh mint is something that is always, you know, in the cuisine, it's on the table, that really speaks, you know, a lot to me about, wow, as you said, they know, I mean, that this is a powerful thing and keep it around and it's good for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's so part of, it's inherent in the Lebanese persons that even when they live in the city, they will always have outside on their little balcony a little, maybe it's a milk can. They turn it into a mint container. They grow their own fresh mint. This is, I've seen it so often, so everywhere. And even in the city, you see people trying to grow the vineyard on the
roof. And do you have what's your favorite super quick little recipe where somebody can use some mint every day? Would it be with a little sort of the yogurt?
You put it in your sandwich.
Oil?
Mint has always been our sandwich when we were kids. We would put a layer in, you know, you open your bread, you put a layer of drained cheese, which is called labneh, then you sprinkle it with a bunch of mint, a drizzle of olive oil, a couple of olives, some slices of tomatoes, maybe a cucumber that you slice, and that's it. You roll it up and you eat it. This was a standard lunch.
That actually sounds good, and now you've made me hungry. So I want to thank you once again for taking time out of, I know, your busy schedule, and be on the show with us again, and we've absolutely got to have you back. And folks can find you at tasteofbeirut.com, correct? And can they get the book there?
The cookbook is called Taste of Beirut, and it's available online.
Okay, great. Jumana, thanks so much again. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for sharing yourself and your wonderful cuisine with us today.